Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, bringing you the latest in local and regional news in collaboration with our partner media outlets. Our first story today is by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie on the upcoming launch, an invitation for home movie submissions to be featured at the inaugural Home Movie Day at the Screening Room this October.
The Kingston Film Heritage Project and Vulnerable Media Lab have partnered to bring a Home Movie Day event to Kingston in October. Home Movie Day has been an annual celebration of home movies and immature films held at venues worldwide since 2003. Started by a group of film archivists concerned about what would happen to all the home movies shot on film during the 20th century. The event gives community members an opportunity to see their films on the big screen, as well as have their memories digitized for free. Home Movie Day events also often include tips for preserving films. It was announced that Saturday, October 19th, will be the inaugural event for Kingston, taking place at the Screening Room. All proceeds for this event will also be going towards All Our Relations Land Trust, a charitable organization led by Indigenous peoples committed to supporting and protecting the environment in the Kingston area. The theme for films this year is transience. To learn more about this first-time event for the city, CFRC sat down with organizer Adam Cook. Here is a bit of that conversation. This year, the Kingston Film Heritage Project and Vulnerable Media Lab announced Home Movie Day 2024. So this has been kind of a named event since early 2000s. What is Home Movie Day?
Yeah, Home Movie Day started over 20 years ago. Basically, a group of film archivists were concerned about what was going to happen to all the home movies shot on film specifically during the 20th century, a kind of concern that we share at the Vulnerable Media Lab, which is housed in the Film and Media Department at Queen's. And it's an annual event held around the world with different participating cities where local home movies are exhibited for a public audience. This is the inaugural edition in Kingston, and we're really excited to be the ones hosting the first ever Home Movie Day in Kingston.
Yeah, awesome. What was sort of the inspiration to bring it to Kingston, and how are you and your team feeling about spearheading this inaugural year?
Yeah, well, it comes naturally to us working in the Vulnerable Media Lab, which is a state-of-the-art historic media transfer remediation and restoration research lab. Basically, we scan, digitize, and restore various media, including celluloid film, but not limited to it, mini DV tapes, VHS, et cetera, et cetera. So we're always looking to embark on new projects internally at the lab, but also curatorially. We like to, engage with the public, engage with Kingston, and specifically with the Kingston Film Heritage Project, which we've been running for some months now. We're looking to engage with the city's history, archival materials of the city, and now in the case of Home Movie Day, material produced by locals or people living here. It's okay if they're just passing through, too. Our theme for the first edition is transience.
Yeah, for sure. And could you get into that theme a little bit, transience? What was the choice there, and what does that mean exactly?
Well, what it means is something that we're happy to leave to the interpretation of those curious about submitting. Transience, of course, could really be used to describe home movies and vulnerable media in general. Of course, the temporary nature of things, of material, but also the passage of time. Home movies are typically linked with nostalgia, so it seemed fitting to go with the theme of transience, but we wanted to keep it as open-ended as possible to let the folks who might have some home movies up in their attic or whatever that they want to dig out, some creativity when they're thinking of submitting to us.
Awesome. Yeah. And you describe this media as vulnerable. And of course, it's in the title there, Vulnerable Media Lab. I was wondering if you could get into a bit of what that means.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm sure people kind of envision celluloid film, 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter, Super 8, what have you, as being vulnerable. We know that it deteriorates over time unless it's kept in really ideal conditions. We do have our own vault, our own archive in the film and media department where we preserve a lot of different film. But actually, digital media is arguably just as vulnerable. It's a bit of a misnomer that it's celluloid film that is. So really, any kind of media, including contemporary forms of it, are all vulnerable to different forms of expiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I guess this event, yeah, it's about nostalgia, preservation. And yeah, are you hoping that this event will continue to be an annual thing in the future? Or are you guys just kind of rolling with it this year?
Well, ideally, yeah. I think it would be wonderful if this could be an annual event in Kingston and ongoing as part of the Kingston Film Heritage Project. What it actually turns out to be is really in the hands of the people listening to this right now. Submissions are open now, and we are open to anything, really. If people want information about how to submit their home movies, potentially have them digitized for their own posterity, and then potentially projected on the big screen, they can do so now. If they go to the Screening Room website, because that's where we will be hosting the screening, you'll find information there, or they can email me at 22ac18@queensu.ca for more information. So it's up to the people who submit their home movies what kind of content we'll get, and how much what the volume of submissions will be. Hopefully it's popular. It's important to us to keep the barriers to a minimum for this event. So it is pay what you can, with proceeds going to a charity, all our Relations Land Trust. And we'll be accepting submissions for the rest of the month and then hosting the screening October 19th at 1 p.m. at the Screening Room.
Awesome. Yeah. And like you just said there, there's still quite a while to submit. Have you received any submissions so far? How's it looking?
Well, the submission process, we wanted to kind of make as easy as possible, both for those submitting and for ourselves. So submitting your home movie actually doesn't involve sharing your home movie with us. You just have to fill out a quick form. Honestly, it takes about 5 minutes to fill out. We just want to hear a little bit about what it is that you are thinking of submitting. And then based on that, we're going to contact a handful of people and get in touch with them about getting a hold of their home movies. And those are the ones that we'll digitize and project on October 19th.
Submissions for home movies to digitize and feature at the screening are being accepted until the end of September. You can visit screeningroomkingston.com for more details. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News on Kingston's very first home movie day.
Thank you, Chris. Coming up next, we have a report by Owen Fullerton, local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News, on the commencement of modular bridge building over the LaSalle Causeway. Our proposal to begin building a temporary modular bridge on September 19th was greenlit on the morning of September 12th. Public Services and Procurement Canada announced on July 19th that a temporary modular bridge would be built to restore vehicular and pedestrian access. The proposal from Priestley Demolition Inc., who also handled the recent demolition of the causeway, was open for comment through the Common Project Search Registry until September 4th, and its status was changed to approve last Thursday morning. Public notices were placed earlier this month informing of the proposed plan, which would see work on a temporary modular bridge to replace the Bascule Bridge, ready for public use by the end of September, with openings planned once per month midway through October and November. While it's good news for a number of Kingston businesses who have felt the impact of the closure and commuters who will have another option to get across the river, businesses that rely on access to the waterway have some issues and questions that remain unanswered. Mark Ackert, who captains the Kawartha Voyager for Ontario Waterway Cruises, Inc., doesn't understand why this work couldn't be pushed off another 2 weeks when the Rideau Canal will be closed for the season, and says he made that objection known throughout the comment process. I'm really perplexed at the choosing of the date, Ackert said. How did they choose the date? It's been closed since the 1st of April. What's two more weeks? The other objection we have is that the vehicular traffic does actually have options. Once they close that to marine traffic, there is no option. It's closed. Ackert said the permit also included a provision saying that the bridge opening schedule for the 2025 schedule wouldn't be discussed until late December, and he says that is far too late for businesses to make informed decisions about their upcoming year. He says the decisions being made are unprecedented. A lot of people have to make decisions and plan and schedule in advance, and we're already 60% booked for next year for 12 times going through that bridge, Ackert said. I've seen a total of 37 brand new bridges and major retrofits over our waterways. None of them have stopped navigation for weeks on end, none of them. So what makes this bridge in Kingston so special? Eric Ferguson, who operates both Kingston Thousand Islands Cruises and Kingston Trolley Tours, says while it's good news for Kingston and the Trolley Tours side of his business, this modular bridge shouldn't be coming at the expense of a navigable waterway. He says while the lack of communication around next year's schedule is reason for concern, it's clear that the proposed schedule for October and November won't be enough for next season, and that boat operators don't want to dock in the Inner Harbor without more clarity on that. There is no other way into the Inner Harbor for boats other than the LaSalle Causeway. That bridge must lift more frequently than they've announced so far, Ferguson said. It's just not feasible to expect that we would go in without knowing when we can get out. Earlier this year, local cruise lines almost took to legal action after botched repairs to the LaSalle Causeway forced ships that were expected to be in operation to be moored. Chris Shelley, who owns General Brock Commissary, says for downtown businesses, a two-week difference is significant, and having access to the bridge again is overdue and has been difficult for businesses to contend with, especially when already contending with trying to rebound from COVID. He says if the bridge had been closed without the tourist season to soak up the loss of East End business, the impacts could have been devastating. Tourist season for us is tailing off, Shelley said. Comparing this to last year, we're noticing the difference. If this happened in, let's say, October and went over Christmas, it would be deadly, he added. And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Up next, we have a report by Michelle Dory Forestell, local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, on lower costs to Kingston police over move-in weekend at Queen's University. Kingston Police's costs were significantly lower during the 2024 Queen's move-in period than during the same period in 2023, according to the local police service. In advance of the Kingston Police Service's board meeting on Thursday, September 19, 2024, Chief of Police Scott Fraser has published a report summarizing police activities during the Queen's move-in weekend. Mainly attributed to overtime incurred by the enforcement team, total costs for both weekends came to $23,489.98, a 55.5% reduction compared to last year's costs of $52,823. Fraser notes that the Friday of the first move-in weekend, that is Friday, August 30th, was quieter than anticipated. However, there were still areas of concern, most notably at the Gord Downey Pier on King Street. Due to the University District Safety Initiative, the pier was closed and fenced off every night from 8 p.m. until 6:30 a.m. However, Fraser indicates there was an influx of people bypassing the barriers and entering the area, resulting in extra calls for bylaw and officers upstaffing. Fraser also notes that the Hub Entertainment District on Princess Street between Division and Barry was also significantly busy in the early Saturday morning hours, with students, presumably second to fourth year since move-in day, had not yet occurred, he said. Besides issues at the pier and saturated numbers in the Hub area, the demeanor of the students on Friday was generally good, Fraser noted, with people milling about and exploring but not causing significant problems beyond a few Liquor Control Act infractions. He writes that Saturday was significantly busier, with approximately 3,000 students taking over University Avenue by 10:15 p.m. Fraser reports that with only six upstaffing officers and City of Kingston bylaw officers available, the incident commander directed the officers to contain the area for public safety. The crowds were likely made worse after an event on Tyndall Field ended, he says, and while there were no fireworks or projectiles involved on Saturday, Fraser states that the attitude from students was that of transient and loitering drunken behavior. City of Kingston bylaw personnel expressed some concern when the area was not declared a nuisance party, Fraser notes. However, given the resources available, the decision was made to limit the risk of harm to attendees and officers through containment and selective enforcement. Liquor enforcement was conducted on the outskirts and two Queens-related arrests were made, according to the police chief's report. The pier was an issue yet again on Saturday, Fraser writes, but students were peaceful and not causing problems. He notes that a few individuals from a criminal subculture element were spotted loitering in and around the grounds. They were dealt with and moved along. Of particular concern in Fraser's report was the construction area on Aberdeen Street, with multiple students entering the site, climbing on equipment and loitering. There was also a large crater-like area at the corner of Earl and Aberdeen Streets, described as a swimming pool, which the chief notes has and will continue to pose a significant risk to public safety. The city of Kingston should consider expediting construction in this area prior to homecoming, or it will be a safety concern and pose issues for police and bylaw on many levels. There were no street gatherings on Sunday, September 1st. However, the chief notes that there was an unusual congregation at Victoria Hall residence, where around 900 students gathered on the front lawn of the complex. Queen's campus security did call in out of concern due to sheer numbers, but the students were peaceful and not causing problems, so police action was not required. Fraser also notes that some traffic enforcement was required for unruly drivers after kids were caught showing off with their vehicles and driving irresponsibly. A significant number of highway traffic infractions were late as a result. On Friday, September 6th, Queen's held an outdoor concert on its property near University Avenue and Union Street. Following the concert's conclusion, Fraser notes that many students made their way towards the University District and the Hub Entertainment District. Less than ideal weather resulted in most students moving indoors, which prevented a street gathering, the report says, adding that the extra officers available for the night were not required after midnight and therefore ended their shifts early. There were no major issues reported by the officers or bylaw department, the police chief says in the report. On Saturday, September 7th, Fraser notes that there was a Queen's football game in the afternoon at Richardson Stadium, as well as a semi-formal held at Grant Hall, which attracted a lot of students and kept them away from the university district. The semi-formal event concluded at 11 p.m. and there were no significant issues to report. Fraser writes, it should be noted that the two-tiered approach has been very well received by students. In fact, many of the officers who were in attendance relayed the same information. As in the past, we are utilizing Part 3 summonses to allow for the potential of higher fines and in-person court appearances. Due to the volume issues at court, the summonses are being reserved for the most egregious behavior and other fines are being issued on regular offense notices. Police laid 163 charges for Liquor License and Control Act violations, as well as 24 Highway Traffic Act charges. Bylaw officers issued 105 tickets for failure to abide by signage, 4 for amplified sound, and 42 for yelling and shouting. For the two weekends, fines laid by the Kingston Police Enforcement officers totaled $19,535, and fines laid by the City of Kingston bylaw officers totaled $16,920. Fraser noted that the Kingston Police expenses for the Queen's move-in were mainly attributed to overtime incurred by the enforcement team. Some minor costs were incurred for equipment, supplies, or meals that have not been posted or calculated at this time. And thank you to Michelle Dory-Forstel for that report. Coming up next, we have a report by Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans of CJAI Amherst Island Radio on the Great Lakes Islands Alliance announcement of its first-ever strategic plan.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
The Great Lakes Islands Alliance announced its first ever strategic plan spanning to 2034. The plan looks to address challenges facing Great Lakes Islands, such as emergency preparedness and general communications. The main focus of the plan is building the Great Lakes Islands Alliance into the go-to connector organization for the island communities involved. Member of the Amherst Island Community Alliance, David Pickering, notes one of the more important issues the island has taken on since becoming a member of the Great Lakes Islands Alliance.
One of the things that we've discussed in detail at the Community Alliance was a report from one of the other islands that actually did a emergency exercise for one of their islands and found that it failed miserably because of poor communications, lack of interoperability, and a variety of other things that meant that they couldn't achieve the exercise objectives. And it sort of came as a big call to wake up and start over again and come up with a better emergency plan, because this didn't work. And certainly that in itself is encouraging the Community Alliance to discuss with the new fire chief, as well as the township, the state of emergency planning for Amherst Island.
Pickering explains how Amherst Island's representative at the Great Lakes Islands Alliance, Paul Juniper, brought back the idea of a winter carnival.
Probably the most significant was the entire winter carnival. Paul arrived at one of the meetings for the Community Alliance and said, here is the schedule for the winter carnival. They are now doing their 56th annual one. Maybe we could put something together. And the Community Alliance hit the various service organizations like Ames and the Museum and the Women's Institute and so on. And everybody said, well, we can support this particular event. And they turned around and they made it into a program and they invited people. And apparently it was quite successful.
The Alliance's leadership team developed the plan over the last year. The four primary goals in the Alliance's foundational charter helped shape the creation of the plan. The four goals are facilitating connection between island communities, improving information access, encouraging multi-island collaboration, and amplifying island voices. With the new plan, the Alliance also looks to improve its environmental and socioeconomic program areas, central operations and capacity, and long-term sustainability. While mainly focusing on island communities, the Alliance also recognizes the importance of raising awareness of island life among mainland audiences, including governments and the general public. The Great Lakes Islands Alliance is set to host its fifth summit this year from September 22nd to 25th near the Les Chinois Islands of Northern Lake Huron. The summit provides an opportunity for islanders from around the Great Lakes to come together to learn about each other's communities and share solutions to the various economic, social, and environmental challenges facing islands. This year's event will feature more than 20 speakers, panel discussions, and guided tours. The event will cover a range of topics, including tourism, island schools, youth engagement, media, biodiversity, and emergency preparedness. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that report. And now it's time for the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report. Tonight, we're going to have clear skies with a low of 13. On Friday, sunny skies with a high of 26. And Friday night, a low of 16 with clear skies. Saturday, September 21st, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud and a high of 25. Clear weather on Saturday night with a low of 15. And on Sunday, we'll have sunny skies with a high of 24 with cloudy periods that night and a low of 11. And now it's time for this week's Release Radar in partnership with the Kingston Music Office. We're pleased to share a new single by Kingston's own Lotus Shaker called Visceral Response, streaming now on your favorite platforms. Marking a thrilling evolution in their sound, Visceral Response blends heavy progressive music with Brittany Langford's commanding vocals, exploring a raw weight of grief with the artwork anchored in a personal cherished memory. Want to get your music featured in Release Radar? Fill out the survey today at visitkingston.ca/music. In the meantime, please enjoy Visceral Response by Lotus Shaker right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
In this moment we're consumed.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
This is Sean Kelly, Chris Bown, and Sarah Harmer saying
C.
You're listening to 101.9
in Kingston. Welcome to Absolutely Frivolous, one of the best audio comedy shows going on right now here in Canada. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located on the web at cfrc.ca. All our contact information is there. You can call us 533-CFRC or try our business line 533-2121. You can email us at cfrc@ams.queensu.ca, or you can head on down to the station. We are located at Carruthers Hall here on Queen's Campus. There's a great map on cfrc.ca indicating we are located right beside the bookstore. CFRC is a wonderful place to volunteer. You're welcome to come here anytime and talk to the staff. A lot of our volunteers are longtime volunteers. We enjoy programming and doing behind the scenes things as well, such as volunteering at events and working on the website. There's all kinds of things that you can participate in and not necessarily do on air radio. So check us out. Come on down to the station or give us a call. Like I said, our number is 533-CFRC. Erwin Barker was a Canadian comedian and writer. He wrote for This Hour Has 22 Minutes and The Rick Mercer Report, and he was nominated for 4 Gemini Awards as a writer and 1 as a stand-up performer for his 2005 performance at the Halifax Comedy Festival. Erwin was also nominated for 3 Writers Guild of Canada Screenwriters Award, and he won the award in 2008. He was also a regular writer and contributor for CBC Radio's The Debaters. In 2007, Barker was diagnosed with a rare type of terminal cancer. He joked that his doctor had given him 12 months to live, but my lawyer says he can get it down to 8. After his diagnosis, he was active as an inspirational speaker on how he used humor as a vital coping mechanism in his personal fight against cancer. He was a headline performer at numerous cancer fundraisers, as well as a keynote speaker for conferences dealing with cancer and palliative care. His first year of cancer treatment was the subject of a CTV documentary entitled That's My Time. The documentary debuted at the 2008 Atlantic Film Festival and was nationally televised in September 2008. Reaction to Barker's presentations on comedy and cancer have been overwhelmingly positive. In Barker's own words, "Cancer has my body, but not my spirit, and I'll continue to make jokes, not so much about cancer, but in spite of it." He died in Toronto on June 21st, 2010.
I don't know why the pilot is so concerned that we know who he is. You know, you're trying to have a little sleep on the plane, but oh no, they can't do that.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen. It's your captain speaking, Captain Richardson.
Oh man, if only I had a pen, huh? Put that on my list of things I care nothing about. Captain Richardson, was that it? I gotta remember this now? For what? 3 years later, midnight at Burger King.
Can I take your order, please?
Captain Richardson? Hey. It's me, Erwin. 8A. How you doing, man? Do a show, took the bus, and this big greasy guy sitting beside me, and I fell asleep
had my head flopped over and just landed on this guy's shoulder, and he just freaked out on me, just bang, practically put me through the window. Guy looks at me and he goes, "What are you, gay?" Like that would be my big move, huh? Yeah. Spent the winter here in Halifax. Got to experience the big hurricane, Juan. That was quite... I love the fact that the armed forces were in there afterwards to clean up all the debris and the branches and everything. In camouflage, that was interesting. It's just... We had the flooding in Winnipeg, and they had the armed forces in there as well, putting up sandbags to help save the city. Toronto, of course, the big blizzard, they had the army in there, shovel them out. Montreal, the ice storm. That's what I love about Canada. We're the type of country where when you see troops moving in, right away you're thinking, oh, looks like we're in for some bad weather.
This is Bob Duthie, station volunteer from 1958 to 1959. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Bluegrass is great music, but on Sunday mornings you can hear the best of bluegrass, gospel bluegrass, on Brother Brian's Bluegrass Show. Tune in to 101.9 FM to hear some old, some new, some standards, and some new grass with a big mix of groups, some national, some international, and a lot of local groups and musicians. Along with great music, you get an informative mix of weather, traffic info, record and group reviews, and even some humor to start your Sunday off the right way. Don't forget, every Sunday morning, 8 to 10, listen to Gospel Bluegrass on Brother Brian's Bluegrass Show on CFRC 101.9 Queen's University Radio.
Right, now, my final guest tonight is an 84-year-old man. During his long, distinguished, maverick political career, he's been famous for his outspoken views and the outspoken way of speaking them. In 1963, he reduced interviewer David Frost to a gibbering wreck of tears. In a recent TV debate with feminist Andrea Dworkin, he caused outrage when he told her to shut up and shave. And only last week, he sensationally renounced his peerage and left the House of Lords. I'd better watch out, and so had you, as we get to know Lord Morgan of Glossop. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Lord Morgan of Glossop, aha.
No,
you're not going to do that. Okay. Now, you've just resigned from the House of Lords. Do you want to tell us about that?
1 week ago, I stood up in the House of Lords and I said, "My lords and ladies, you're all arses. Goodbye."
Great. You've just published your autobiography. What's that about?
It's about my life, you ask.
You describe your childhood in the book, and I imagine your life in Glossop in Derbyshire. I imagine a life of cobbly streets, of inclement weather, a wholesome existence. Is that fair?
When I was five, I walked into the parlour and I witnessed my father shooting my mother. He then placed the shotgun into his own mouth and blew his brains out.
So it wasn't an idyllic childhood.
On the contrary, I was spared the ridiculous hypocrisy of family life. The only friend a man needs is the bottle.
Right. No doubt, then, if you're so fond of the bottle, you'll be quite pleased that we left a bottle of 10-year-old malt in your dressing room.
Yes, it's all gone.
Did you enjoy it?
Piss.
I can see why David Frost started crying.
He's an arse.
No. Well, I won't ask what I am.
You're an arse.
So, after childhood, what happened then?
Adolescence.
And what was that like?
Like childhood, but with more pubic hair.
Please.
I got you there.
Yes. Certainly did. Now...
You are...
Look, please. Please. Now, Lord Morgan, please. People are listening. Now, in Oxford, in the 1930s, you went up to Oxford to study the classics. And it was there you met W.H. Auden,
poof.
Stephen Spender, Cecil Day Lewis.
Big poof.
Now, you didn't like them, did you?
Nancy boy, communist poof to poets. Old puffy poets prancing around.
Right, okay. So you didn't like them?
You arse.
Don't say that again, please. Please.
If you don't want me to say it again, I won't say it again. Give you my word.
Are you a man of your word?
Nope.
Right. You've been very outspoken. You're in favour of hanging.
Only for criminals.
Right, but oddly, more recently, you've been an outspoken defender of pornography. Why?
What a man chooses to do in the privacy of his own attic. It's his business alone.
Right, but what about the feminist argument that pornography degrades women?
But is it not the case that sex degrades women? If it's any good.
Yes.
It's true.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. Now, you're in Who's Who, and...
I like those prostitutes.
I'm sorry?
I like those prostitutes. They were very nice.
Who? What prostitutes?
Those prostitutes you had on before.
They were guests. You can't say that. They were guests.
They looked like whores.
Don't say that.
Whores.
Don't.
Well, they
look,
did.
Look. I know they look like whores. I can't say that. Now, I would love to be in Who's Who. And, what I've got here is my entry for Who's Who as follows.
Oh.
Alan Gordon Partridge, born April the 2nd, 1955, Norwich. Journalist, commentator, broadcaster and interviewer for Anglia TV's Sport Report, On the Hour, BBC Radio 4, host of Own Chat Show, Knowing Me, Knowing You, Radio 4 and others. Is that the sort of thing that would be an acceptable form of words with which to grace the hallowed turf of Who's Who's pages? No? I see that your own entry, you list your hobbies, food, whiskey, and your attic. I mean, do you eat often? Lord Morgan? Lord Morgan? Can we have the chief medical officer, please? Sorry.
I'm very worried. Is there anything at all?
I'm afraid it's past his
No, right, I'll deal with this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's with great regret that I have to announce that Lord Morgan of Glossop passed away peacefully some moments ago. And on that bombshell... I can't do that. This is a profound moment. The only thing is that we perhaps observe a minute's silence. In fact, I ought to cover him. I'm taking my sweater off. I'm just going to... draping over his head. I've draped my sweater over his head to preserve some dignity. As Lord Morgan sits immovable beneath the hastily improvised Pringle shroud. It seems somehow appropriate to say, this is knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, Lord Morgan, rest in peace. Aha. please, one minute silence, starting now. Please, stop whatever you're doing if you're in the car, pull over. If you're on the motorway, please pull in at the next service station and observe a minute's silence in your own time. If you're on the M1, there's Scratchwood, Toddington, and Newport Pagnell, where you'll find a country kitchen. If you're on the M6, you've got Knutsford, Sandbach, and Hilton Park. So, a minute's silence. I'll have to speak periodically to show we're still broadcasting. This is Radio 4. With Alan Partridge. Dear one, waiting for the sunrise, every little rosebud is covered through, and my heart is calling for you, the thrush on high, its sleepy mate is calling, and my heart is calling you.
Interested in social justice or environmental issues? Do you want to make local connections to global issues? And do you want to break outside the Queen's bubble? Well, sign up for the Ontario Public Interest Research Group's free newsletter, Ear to the Ground. It's emailed out once a week and is full of local events such as speakers, films, festivals, community arts, and activist action alerts. You can subscribe on the Oprah Kingston website. Go to www.operg.org or call 533-3189.
It all started when I took a job as a private dick, specializing in locating people. The firm was called Pathfinders. My first job, my quest, if you will, was to focus on this regal viper and track her on her latest excursion from Tacoma to Dakota via Montana. So far as I could tell, this swift little trooper's expedition had left a Tahoe of Maxima heartache from Park Avenue to Silverado. Her name was Savannah Isuzu. And I was bently on finding her, no matter how Ferrari I Honda go to do it. Besides, this little venture was my passport to the Ultima Golf Odyssey. And I wasn't about to pass that up. I finally saw her in a rundown bar in Surrey. Seducing her was integral to my plan. So not wanting to appear cheap, I ordered some Lamborghini and sat her next to her. She had the Mitsubishi. Audi. I said. Been looking forward to meeting you. Jimmy Durango's the name, but my friends call me Intrepid. What's your sign? I said. Taurus. I wanted to explore her right then, so I put my hand on her neon under the sable. I'm taking Vitara, I said. I was trying to impress her. She seemed intrigued by my mystique. Camaro, she whispered. So being as cavalier as I could, I leaned toward her expecting a kiss, but she dodged at the last minute and I rammed my face into the back of her chair. That Mustang, she said. Then she whispered in my ear, Jetta life, Durango. I knew right then a Hummer was out of the question. Don't call 911, I said. I Mazda mistaken you for someone looking for a Buick Chevrolet. You don't know what you're missing. I could feel her mercury rising. Lexus, get something straight, Durango, she said. If you're Lincoln, you can Rolls Royce in here, get me Lotus and probe my Volvo. You got another thing coming, Pontiac. I knew right then she was no pushover. But I had my pride, Hyundai. I wasn't about to legacy my embarrassment. Toyota have the bouncer throw you out, she said. But I Cadillac ya. My low self-esteem seemed to echo through the bar, but it was but a prelude to the insight I gained when she Volkswagen vanished like a mirage on the breeze. You go! I shouted. Chrysler, she's good, I thought. I suffered from Sonoma that night. A night that seemed to go on for infinity. When morning finally came, it felt like a century had passed, and I knew my days as a pathfinder were over. She'd sent her that. I'd never find a cure for the heartache she caused me, and I woo the day I heard the name Savannah Isuzu.
Hello, my name's Sheila Rogers. I work at CBC Radio now, but my best radio days were at CFRC. 101.9 FM now or CFRC.ca. We could never have thought of the internet back in the 70s. It's great that you're listening. Stay with us.
Listen to the world that will lie.
indie rock, indie pop, 80s alternative, country and western, bluegrass, gospel. On which radio station do you expect to find all of the above?
Metal.
Your local rock station?
Hip hop.
I don't think so. The country and western station? I don't think so. The dance music station? I don't think so. The only place on the airwaves where you'll find programming as diverse as this is right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Check out the schedule at CFRC.ca for a full list of everything CFRC has to offer.
Sports,
rural life, food, literature and poetry, science and technology, comedy, queer news, law,